back to Buckeye Talk. We're wasting no time. Bill, what is the question we've been delaying for 4 weeks about Braxton Miller and JT Barrett that we're getting to right now in the first 21 seconds of the podcast?
Oh, my God. I got to find it. I wasn't ready for that.
Landis, I'm trying to be more straightforward and waste less time. People thought that my absence last week led to less wasting of time and more straightforward talk, and I want to get right to it. The people want straightforward talk. Let's get to it.
I like wasting time. Okay. The question from May 22nd.
From May 22nd.
From Nathan Kopp.
Our guy.
Will Braxton Miller or JT Barrett's legacy be better at Ohio State?
Braxton Miller. Tim, what's your answer?
I would say JT.
Bill, what's your answer?
Cardale Jones.
All right, next question. Wow, what a fascinating question. This is Buckeye Talk. Bill Landis, Tim Bielek, Doug Lamarie, your Ohio State coverage team from Cleveland.com. Thanks to you guys for listening. We'll get to all the usual shenanigans later. But we've owed you this. What day is it?
It's June 11th. We're recording.
And that was from May 22nd?
Yep.
Okay, so not quite a month. We didn't get to a month in delaying that question. Fascinating question from Nathan Kopp, because it goes to legacy and legacy as it relates to records, legacy as it relates to winning, and legacy to me as it relates to like the feeling you get in your heart and in your soul when you think about somebody. And that is something that's not based entirely, at least, on winning and records. And so when we think, part of legacy is storytelling. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me, like when I always talk about like Hall of Fame stuff and that kind of thing and all-time stuff, I always talk about, can you tell the story of the sport without this person? Or if someone said, Grandpa, tell me the story of Ohio State football. How would that person work into that story? And I don't think when you tell a story, the first thing you do isn't like go to the record books and say, well, this person is the third all-time leading pass. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's a chunk of it, but that's not really what you do when you tell a story. You don't immediately like open the, open the encyclopedia. People don't own encyclopedias. Wait, that was a tangent. People don't own encyclopedias anymore. I think when you're telling a story, you would be more apt to tell a Braxton Miller story when you're telling the story of Ohio State football. Now, of course, you tell JT Barrett stories, but maybe wouldn't you tell a Braxton Miller story first?
Yeah, I think so. Like, just because you start thinking about like the exciting moments you saw, like individual plays, and I think that Braxton Miller has far more of those than JT Barrett. Although, who played in more sort of iconic games? JT or Brad? Because maybe you think about the game first.
Yeah, I mean, JT did. I mean, JT is the guy who was 4-0 against Michigan. JT is the guy who led that Penn State miraculous comeback. JT is the guy who led the revenge game at Michigan State that we talked about all the time with JT. Yeah. What they did in 2014 that catapulted that season, and JT Barrett in that game made the best throws he made in his life. I think it's easy in a conversation like this to also short shrift JT Barrett in terms of being an exciting, dynamic player, because he also was that. Like nobody, almost nobody, is Braxton Miller. Mm-hmm. In terms of like individual highlights and individual moments. But JT Barrett also did spectacular things. He wasn't just a stats robot. But yet I still think your natural inclination as an Ohio State fan would be to tell a Braxton Miller story first.
I don't know. I think I changed my mind now. Because I do think you tend to think of the games first before you think of the individual plays. And I don't like other than the national championship win, or like the Sugar Bowl and the championship combined, or that three-game run, whatever. I think, like, maybe the game that jumps to the front of people's minds more than any other one in the last, I don't know, 6 years, we're talking about these two guys, is the 2016 Michigan game, right? Maybe there's a couple in that conversation, but that 2016 Michigan game, they go to overtime, the spot, the comeback they had to have in the fourth quarter, all that stuff, like, and that was largely, if not solely, fueled by JT at the end of that game.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I think, and he's fresher in their minds too. So, like, if we're having this conversation now, if that matters, having this conversation 15 years from now, I still think the 2016 Michigan game might be the first thing that jumps in a person's mind when they're thinking about these two guys or this era of Ohio State football.
Right. The Urban, and it is. It's interesting because this is the Urban era. Mm-hmm. This is the because, you know, I mean, Braxton played as a freshman in 2011, but JT is all about Urban, and Braxton, at his best, carried the first 2 years of the Urban era. So it's something that is going to be talked about because, obviously, the Urban Meyer era, however long it lasts, is going to be an absolutely iconic, memorable, all-time era in Ohio State football. And those two guys were the quarterbacks at the start of it. So where do you weigh in on this, Tim?
I would say the reason I would put JT over Braxton is I want to look back to 2014, the way that season began. And you guys were there, obviously, for the start of it. And Braxton Miller being out in August, JT Barrett taking over, I'm sure no one would have thought they would have played for and won a national championship. And in some ways, JT Barrett saved that season, particularly, you know, with what he did at Penn State in the overtime, playing, I believe, a sprained MCL in overtime and rushing for a couple of overtime touchdowns. I know Joey Bosa had the sack where he pushed Akil Lynch right into Christian Hackenberg to end the game, but JT had those couple rushing touchdowns put away. Michigan State was his statement game. He didn't obviously win them the national championship, but he helped set the stage for Cardale Jones to finish the job. And then I look at Braxton Miller. I mean, his dynamics are incredible. I don't know if I've ever seen a more dynamic player quarterback outside of Terrell Pryor than Braxton Miller. It's kind of interesting the dynamics go from Pryor to Miller back to back. But I think when it came down to Braxton, the thing that might hurt him a little bit, and you might be able to weigh in this better than I will, is kind of the Michigan State game in 2013 when it seemed like they just weren't able to get over that hump and finish that game off. Because if they did, they were going to play, I believe, Florida State for the national championship that season. That didn't happen, and then all that stuff at the Orange Bowl with the shoulder injury to Braxton happens, and he doesn't really ever throw the football again. JT gets you to a national championship. He wins you another Big Ten title, and he gets you to the playoff in 2016, and he wins you a New Year's Six Bowl. There's a lot there to unpack with Barrett.
Yeah, I don't – the postseason for both these guys is interesting.
Yep.
Right? There's, like, unfinished business for both. JT did win a Big Ten championship. And we've had this conversation before about what matters more. Like, the idea that JT didn't win a national championship and wasn't great in the only playoff game he played, I think far outweighs the Big Ten title they won this past season with him at quarterback. And then Braxton, like you said, both these guys, I think, were quarterbacks who were individually capable of winning national championships on teams who were capable of winning national championships, and both came up short.
Right.
And I think that's, like, an interesting piece of this conversation that I don't know. Like, I think both of those things negatively impact their legacies. I just don't know who it negatively impacts more.
I mean, it is funny to think about that that Braxton Miller did not win a postseason game.
Yeah, he's what,
0-3? As a quarterback.
0-3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
His freshman year, they lost the Gator Bowl. 2012, they didn't go to the postseason. In 2013, they lost the Big Ten championship game, and they lost the Orange Bowl to Clemson. Did not win postseason game as a quarterback.
Yeah.
So, and again, it's like JT didn't win a game in 2014.
Yep.
What happened in 2015?
They beat Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl.
Beat Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl.
Lost to Clemson.
2016, didn't play in the Big Ten championship, lost to Clemson, so he's
1-1,
and then won the Big Ten championship and won the Cotton Bowl.
So 3-1.
So 3-1.
So JT 3-1 postseason, Braxton 0-3 postseason, which is just one little thing in that.
Yeah.
Here's a difference, I think, and I'm going to relate it to television, but it's still a football point, so it's not a tangent. They always talk about, and this is in life, but like the idea of like leave them wanting more, right? Braxton's career, not by choice, but by circumstance, did leave you wanting more because he did not max out because of the injury in the Orange Bowl that kept him from ever playing quarterback again. Now, most, and this is I think going to be an interesting point. I hope this is interesting. Most of the greatest Ohio State players do leave you wanting more because they leave eligibility on the table because they're so great. They leave. They do not give you 4 years of football.
Yeah.
Archie did, right? Mm-hmm. But that's it. I mean, who else among the greatest Ohio State players? Did Spielman play 4 years? Now I'm going to sound like an idiot on the podcast. But most do not give you, and even the greats who play a senior season, probably Spielman gave you three,
yep,
did not play much as freshmen. Certainly not like JT did. They did not quarterback a team that eventually won the national championship as a freshman.
Yeah.
So Braxton Miller left you wanting more. Everything he showed you in 2012 and 2013 was suddenly cut short. You thought he was going to be the quarterback in 2014. You thought that going into camp, taken away. He comes back in 2015. There's still, maybe you think, okay, he's going to be a quarterback. It turns out he's been working at receiver all offseason. He's a receiver. They try to work him in at receiver. You can see these flashes of talent, but it never really works that year. And then he's gone to the NFL. So you're left wondering, there's some idea with Braxton Miller of what he could have been. He was great, undoubtedly. He did so much. He did enough. He did more than enough. I mean, he played 3 years here. So he did more than enough, but he still had some sense of, oh, man, for all he did, what could have been. JT squeezed every last drop out of that wash rag.
Yeah.
Wrung it out. Imagine if JT Barrett had, and this is like, we can say it, you never want to joke about injuries, but we can say it because it didn't happen. But imagine that when he hurt his leg against Michigan, his freshman year, he had never played again. It's a career-ending injury. That guy gives his body up in his first Michigan game, comes out of the locker room and sits in the stands for the end of that game, watches his team hang on and win that game, and then watches his team go on and win a national championship. And JT Barrett never plays again. What's that legacy?
I don't know. I certainly don't think it's stronger. Maybe, I mean, the lessons of time, you sort of got to poke and prod JT and pick his game apart. But he accomplished a lot after that. So I don't know. I think it adds maybe a little more intrigue. And I do think what you're saying is valid in terms of leaving them wanting more. And maybe he is revered a little more favorably because all we knew then was that JT Barrett was a freshman who threw 45 touchdowns or accounted for 45 touchdowns and had that awesome game against Michigan State and like looked like a quarterback who was going to get Ohio State to the national championship. Yeah, I think maybe it's a little more favorable.
I mean, this is not some great argument. This is how life works. This is James Dean never having a chance to like get old and make a bunch of crappy movies. This is like Tupac. Snoop Dogg is hosting The Joker's Wild.
Yeah.
You know, like, and Ice Cube is making like family friendly kids movies. Right. And it doesn't mean those guys aren't great artists, and it doesn't take away from what they did at their peak as great artists, but you have the chance to have the run of your career. And you just don't fire on all cylinders for your, I mean, few yeah. do, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, like, and I'm not, I mean, like, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about with like, but I think.
No, I think those are good. Those are good analogies.
But like, I mean, what if Tupac was hosting The Joker's Wild? He wouldn't exactly be Tupac, right?
Yeah.
Is that not, I mean, I'm not trying to like disparage anybody.
I think you're on the right path. I think you're right.
Snoop Dogg does a commercial for hair product now to like not be bald. There's like a thing where Snoop Dogg has his like an emoji on the screen, and he's like doing a commercial and being Snoop Dogg, and then you realize at the end it's like for a Rogaine knockoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, what? But it's because he stuck around. Now, of course, it's great that he stuck around. He's been part of culture and society for decades.
Yeah.
And JT Barrett was part of Ohio State football for 4 years, which was long enough for people to get sick of him. Because he had his chance in the end to make a Rogaine commercial. And if he had broken his leg to the degree as a freshman that he had never played again, you would have been like, now, of course, I'm not saying he only made a Rogaine. He did amazing things. He's 4-0 against Michigan. And I think that's the one thing, I think, in the end, because I remember when Troy Smith became the first quarterback to go 3-0 against Michigan since Tippy Dye. Mm-hmm. And it was like, whoa. And people talk about Tippy Dot. JT's 4-0 against Michigan. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's possible it never happens again, right?
It's not going to be broken. It's only going to be...
It can't be broken. It can't be broken.
So, like, that is amazing and very well, again, because it's a unique thing of usually if you're good enough to play as a freshman, you're good enough to leave before you're a senior.
Right.
You have to hit a pretty interesting sweet spot to play that early and stick around. So I do think... JT Barrett.
But even 4-0 against Michigan comes with an asterisk in a lot of people, I think in some people's minds.
Because of, like, the spot? Or
no, because, like, they were winning when he got hurt in 14, but he didn't close that game. And then they were losing when he got hurt last year, and then Dwayne Haskins finished that game off. So, like, technically, he's still 4-0. I'll give him credit for being 4-0, but I think you can nitpick that, too.
No, it is. It is, because he stuck around long enough to get nitpicked. And I feel like Braxton didn't. Not as a quarterback.
As a quarterback. Yeah.
And then once, what happened in 15, a lot of it was like not his fault. It was just.
They didn't know what to do with him.
They didn't know what to do. Their inability to how to use him. So you don't have a lot, but you still remember, I mean, you remember the crazy juke move at the goal line against Penn State.
Yeah.
Right? And you remember the spin move against Virginia Tech in 15.
He was really good in that game. I randomly watched Virginia Tech game and from the 15 opener, like,
you did?
2 or 3 weeks ago. I don't know why. I can't remember why I watched it. I might have just, like, fell down a YouTube hole. Like, he was, like, I think I might have wrote the story, like, I was like, oh, man, Braxton Miller is going to be, like, a top 10 receiver in the country based off this game alone. He was awesome in that game.
And then why couldn't they figure out what to do with him then?
I don't know.
Well, part of what's interesting with Braxton to me is I was thinking about it. His first two seasons as a starter, 2011, we all know just what everything that went wrong with that. He probably wasn't even supposed to be the starter at that point.
Oh, no, yeah. Terrell Pryor's supposed to be the starter.
Yeah, and then he takes over pretty much zero expectations. He did have that tremendous moment in the Wisconsin game with that touchdown to Devin Smith.
And again, that's a top five Braxton moment that is going to stick in the minds of Ohio State fans forever.
Yeah, and then you go to 2012, a season where they're not going to make a bowl game again. Maybe there's not as much pressure on him because there's nowhere to go after the regular season. 2013, you get to that Big Ten title game again. You're undefeated. Urban Meyer still hasn't lost. Biggest game of Braxton's career. And, you know, things obviously didn't go well for him in Ohio State. That fourth down stop and kind of ended that national championship dream. Then the Clemson game, Taj Boyd outduels him. And then that shoulder injury that we all know what happened to him. So, I mean... It's the ultimate question, what his legacy would be like if he was the starting quarterback in 2014. Do they still win the national championship that season? Because if he gets hurt that season, JT Barrett's probably your number two. And does he do the things in the playoff games that Cardale Jones did?
I will say, now that I think about it, and you make a good point, Tim, I distinctly remember in 2014 continually making the point that they would have been doing the same thing with Braxton Miller.
Yeah.
And getting some pushback on that, that some people believe that JT Barrett was like the ideal point guard for that team, running the zone read, distributing the ball, and that Braxton Miller, I thought Braxton Miller very quickly got forgotten in 2014. For as spectacular as he was in 2012 and 13, I thought people very quickly moved on to like, JT's the guy. And like, it was like, you know, Braxton Miller, like, is still over here. Hurt, but he's not going anywhere.
Right.
Like, he's supposed to be back. And everybody's all in on, like, can this team, after the early loss, make a late push and somehow get in the playoff? And people were falling in love with that team. and they were falling. Boy, it's interesting. They were falling in love with JT, and I think forgetting Braxton. I absolutely now are. I fought that battle all year of he would be doing the same thing, if not more, with the realization that, yes, JT ran the zone read better. Braxton wasn't as natural within that, but I think the structure of that offense with the playmakers they had around him in the third year of that coaching staff, the third year of Urban Meyer and Tom Herman, they would have grown to the point where the offense was ready, had grown up, as well as the quarterback. And so JT stepped into a fully formed Urban Meyer, Tom Herman offense, while Braxton Miller was forced to run a still growing, a sapling offense for 2 years that wasn't the real thing. So here we are saying, here I am making the case that Braxton's going to have in some ways a better legacy than JT Barrett, when in the moment, right after Braxton was done, people had forgotten about him and were on a JT. Ugh. I guess I'm wrong.
I guess I'm wrong.
But that was JT. But I think part of that point is people were more in love with JT Barrett in 2014 than they were in 2017.
For sure. Yeah.
Which again is to the point of, if he had never played again, he would have gone down as a hero. And instead, he broke every record, won practically every game, and ended up less appreciated in 2017 than he was as a first-time starter in 2014.
Braxton Miller against Virginia Tech had 8 touches for 140 yards and 2 touchdowns. 2 of those are really long, 50-plus yard plays, but he was awesome.
Malfeasance, right? Yeah. Malfeasance on behalf of the offensive staff. Ed Warren or Tim Beck and Urban Meyer in their inability to figure out how to replicate that even half of that.
Yeah.
What was his next best game?
Oh, I don't have it pulled up.
Against Maryland that season, 5 receptions, 79 yards, and a touchdown.
That's his second best game after his best game was 8 for 150.
He had 3 rushes for 11 yards, but that's kind of inconsequential.
He didn't have another game where he had 100 yards from scrimmage?
I don't think he did.
Quick math in my head, no.
That's terrible. I mean, because then they fell into that Braxton Wildcat stuff.
Yeah.
But they were just snapping him the ball, and he never threw it, and he was running. He was dancing in the backfield and getting 1 yard. That was awful. Braxton the Wildcat was awful. God.
There's no threat to throw.
Like, yeah.
Of course it works when he can also throw it, but
right.
Midway through the season, when it was evident that he was just not going to attempt the pass, it didn't work anymore.
Right.
Maybe before midway.
Right.
Okay, so I had a thing I wanted to bring up. What was it? Oh, I feel like Braxton's legacy, whatever it is, however people define it, is like pretty well set. And I feel like JT's can still be affected by however the Urban Meyer era ends. Meaning, like, Dwayne Haskins could be the starter for 3 years and obliterate every record that JT Barrett has. And then the guy that comes after him can also obliterate every record that JT Barrett had. Because JT Barrett just sort of like helped modernize Ohio State's offense. His records aren't actually that crazy when you look at the scope, like look at it under the scope of college football. And like if Urban wins, you know, another 2 national championships before whenever his time's over, I just feel like JT can get like buried a little bit.
Yeah.
But Braxton, what Braxton has done and what he'll be remembered for, I think is set in stone a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because Braxton's is not as reliant on numbers and places in the record book and that kind of thing. He's sort of his own guy.
And he was first, too. Like, he ushered in the new era, and I think he gets bonus points for that.
Right.
And JT was just like, yeah, I think it's, at the moment, it's not the case, but I think he could potentially, maybe, like, kind of very easily get buried.
I think in my mind, it comes down to the wow plays of Braxton versus the steady hand of JT, and whichever you prefer in that case, I think. That's probably oversimplifying this debate, but I feel like those are the two camps that...
No, I think that's right. Yeah. No, I think it is, like, if you had to, like, describe this debate in 10 words, I think that's it. Acknowledging that Braxton was spectacular, but also won. Like, that would be a difference, too. Like, we're talking about Braxton's spectacular plays, but he was spectacular at times in 2011, and they were 6-7. If he had been spectacular and had like a losing record as a starting quarterback, that would be something different. He was spectacular, but also won. And that's also acknowledging that JT won and put up huge stats, but also could be spectacular. But I do think breaking it down to its core, it's the argument that you said. I also think I do think JT, to your point, Bill, the context around JT will affect his legacy.
Yeah.
Because I also think so. There will always be the debate of would they have won the national title in 2014 had he remained healthy. We, in a previous podcast here on Buckeye Talk, all predicted Ohio State to win the national title this year. If they win the national title the first year after he leaves, and they won the national title when he was a freshman the minute after he got hurt, and the time in between when he was the healthy starting quarterback, they didn't win the national title, that will affect his legacy to some degree, I think. That, like, he put up these huge stats, but as the starting quarterback at the end of the season for 3 years, they didn't do what needed to be done. The year before, when he took them right to the edge and then got hurt, they did it. They got over the top. Cardale got him over the top. And if Dwayne Haskins gets them there this year and gets them over the top, that's going to affect how people view JT Barrett. So I think it's possible that something like that, and what you talked about, the Urban era, how other quarterbacks might put up huge numbers, I think all that could negatively affect JT. However, I also think it's possible that his legacy will grow as time goes on, and you will look more at all the wins. You will look at all the records. You will look back and say, oh, the Penn State comeback and the Michigan State game and the 4-0 record against Michigan. And the further you get away from should they have played Dwayne Haskins, the further you get away from, oh, this guy can't throw the deep ball. Those are discussions that are very nitty-gritty in the moment discussions. And as you get 10, 20 years down the line, I don't know that the first, you know, when people talk positively about JT, and certainly they will, I don't know that people are going to be like, yeah, but he couldn't throw the deep ball. Yeah, but he couldn't throw the deep ball. Yeah. Like when people talk about Rex Kern, you know, I've never heard anybody say, yeah, well, but Rex Kern always ran out of bounds, but Rex Kern, you know, wasn't very accurate over the middle. Or I'm like, I'm making all those things up because I don't know that individual nitty gritty criticisms of Rex Kern, because nobody says them, because it's not the point. The point is that Rex Kern was the quarterback of the Super Softs, led the 1968 team to the national championship. And then Rex Kern is a very good comparison for JT. The Super Softs won the national title in 1968, led by Rex Kern. And in 1969 and in 1970, they were awesome and fell just short. They did not win another national title. But when you look back on that era and that team and that talent led by Rex Kern, who is an iconic figure, Jim Tressel's favorite Buckeye, an absolute Ohio State hero, the discussion, you go a long way before you get to like, yeah, but they didn't win the national title when they were juniors or seniors.
Yeah.
Because that's not really the point. The point is they got a title, he was awesome, and it was fun to be an Ohio State fan in that era. But I don't know what people said in 1970, but I'm sure at some point in that season somebody was like, oh, God, Rex Kern can't make this throw. Rex Kern, oh, the third quarter, they're always bad. You know, the things we do, we all do as media and fans. So I do think I do, but also, part of that is Ohio State went from 1960, and I know 1970 is one of their weird, some sort of claimed national title years, but they didn't win the national title in 1970. They did not win a national title between 1968 and 2002. So all that time, the context made Rex Kern even greater, because for an entire generation or generation and a half of Ohio State fans, Rex Kern was the last quarterback to lead them to a national title. So nobody was banging the drum on, well, they should have won two when they went 34 years without winning another one. But if they had won national titles in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, then maybe Rex Kern wouldn't be Rex Kern.
Yeah.
But for 34 years, he was the last quarterback to win a national title at Ohio State.
Right.
And you never take that away. So let's say, this is a great topic for Ohio State fans. Let's say Ohio State doesn't win another national title for 34 years. It's 2000, 2048. God, can you imagine that? They don't win a national title till 2048.
Mm.
Is that possible that they could do that? Write that down.
I know.
What if Ohio... I mean, that's crazy to think about, right? That Ohio State had a 34-year gap between legitimate national titles. If they don't win a national title until 2048, JT Barrett, they're going to rename the stadium JT Barrett Stadium.
Does he get a statue then?
It's going to be it's going to be Cardell Jones Field at JT Barrett Stadium.
Exactly. Yeah, the statue is going to be JT Barrett and Cardell Jones hugging each other. Like, if those two guys are the last quarterbacks to bring Ohio State a national title for three decades, that changes everything.
They're going to immortalize a scooter.
Seriously. Cardale, yeah, JT on the scooter and Cardale. I mean, that again, that's context. That's exactly what you were saying, Bill, about context. But if Dwayne Haskins leads one this year, that's different. So I do think we're going to have to see what the future holds. JT Barrett is done, but his legacy is not written.
Do you think, and this is, it's not a major deal, and maybe it's a stupid question. Will Braxton be an Ohio State Hall of Famer?
Well, everybody's an Ohio State Hall of Famer.
Not everybody.
Like in the Block O Hall of Fame?
Yeah, like the one they that Lauren Redis just got inducted into.
No, I mean, like anybody who's good gets in there. Like anybody who's at a certain level. I mean,
like JT definitely will be, obviously.
Like you have to be like Braxton. An All-American kind of level. Braxton's definitely in.
Yeah. Who gets in first? You get you play 5 years. They're kind of on the same track because they like to wait until like your pro career is over too.
I'd say JT probably gets in first.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe they'll put him in the same year.
Unless JT is like a backup in the NFL for 10 years and Braxton's done.
Yeah. Not that it shouldn't be part of the distinction.
Let me ask you this question. If we're playing that game, does Cardale get in?
Oh.
Because Cardale was your original answer in the first first 18 seconds of this podcast when we got right down to business. You said Cardale Jones, jokingly, but yet there is something within there.
He never lost. I think it certainly. The one thing they do take into consideration, which is kind of weird, is like what you do after you leave Ohio State. So if like Cardale Jones like ends up being a starter in the NFL for like a year and a half, I think that could help him. He won a national title and he never lost in like 11 starts. I think. Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah, I think he'll get in eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I look forward to that day.
Yeah. No, it's going to be interesting because there's going to be, I mean, when you think about like that 2014 team, they're going to have a lot of guys to get in too. Like obviously Ezekiel Elliott's going to get in. Obviously Joey Bosa's going to get in. Yeah. Like obviously like Billy Price is going to get in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think like of this early Urban era, who's going to be in the Ohio State Hall of Fame? It's like, is Darren Lee going to be in? Is Darren Lee like only was a 1 year starter. Like is... It's going to be interesting. Like, is Malik Hooker going to get in? I know he's not 2014. But
Darren Lee's a two-year starter.
Oh, Darren Lee was a two-year starter because they all came back in 15, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all those guys. Like, is Michael Thomas going to get in? Like, Michael Thomas was great at Ohio State. Michael Thomas is, like, one of the five best receivers in the NFL and might be so for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like, he probably should be. He probably will be. Like, is Von Bell going to be in? Is Joshua Perry going to be in? Joshua Perry, like, a three-year starter, I think, led him in tackles twice. Like a great guy, great. Like, think he's going to do great things in his life on and off the field. Is he going to get in?
Is Devin Smith going to get in?
Is Devin Smith going to get in? Guy was a second round pick.
He made some of the most incredible catches of the Urban Meyer era.
This now sounds like another summer project thing. What recent Ohio, what Buckeyes of the Urban Meyer era? Ooh, well, that's what we should do for induction weekend. Right? They just announced who's in.
Yeah.
Because they put a football guy in every year, but only one football guy.
Right.
So it's like, you can figure out who's going to be in. I mean, of course, Laurinaitis was going to be in. Like, Malcolm Jenkins is going to be in, but Malcolm Jenkins is still playing. But who are the guys of the Urban era that are going to get in? And then there gets to be, just like in the NFL Hall of Fame, there gets to be like a backlog. And it's like, it's like, okay, well, maybe Cardale Jones should be in, but are you going to put him in before you put in Ezekiel Elliott and Joey Bosa and Billy Price. Or maybe he would get in because maybe his NFL career wouldn't be as long. I don't know. Now we should do that.
I want to now have a conversation about Urban Meyer era players who could get into the College Football Hall of Fame.
Okay. Can we write this down? Urban era Hall of Famers. People love that kind of stuff. We'll write it. Urban era Hall of Famers, summer project.
I didn't realize you had to be a first-team All-American to get into the College Football Hall of Fame. It's part of the criteria.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it makes sense, because then it helps narrow the field. But, like, I was just reading about it online.
Like, Braxton won't ever be in.
But, like, Joe Montana's not in, because he was never a first-team All-American.
Okay. Right.
And Nick Bosa, since he was a first-teamer that last season, already is eligible to get in.
Right. And it is. It's hard. It's weird. It, like quarterback, it's like, every year in college football, 10 of the 20 most famous players in college football, or 10 of the 15 most famous, are quarterbacks. Yeah. But only one of them, and maybe if it's on different teams, maybe two or three, if it's really close, can all be All-Americans. But, you know, like, Johnny Manziel was a first-team All-American, and Joe Montana is not. So Johnny Manziel is going to be in the College Football Hall of Fame, and Joe Montana isn't.
Yeah.
So, but, and like, Braxton Miller was never a first-team All-American because he wasn't. He was a quarterback who was more than a quarterback, but also wasn't quite a quarterback when you compare him to guys who throw for 350 yards per game. So he was never going to be that. But, like, again, if you're telling the story of college football, maybe you want Braxton Miller in there, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
So, okay. That's interesting. Let's...
Did we give our answer?
What was our answer? What was the question?
Who will have the better legacy?
Sometimes I like to talk out something without ever answering it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Way to pin us all down.
I am curious what the readers and listeners think.
Yeah, so
I think there are definitely people who are like, you guys are idiots. The answer is obviously JT because he has 9 million records.
Right. So is this the poll? Tim, explain the thing you're doing off every podcast now.
Well, what we're doing, we started this last week when I asked people on Thursday. I'm going to pull the poll up right now. Bill and I talked recruiting last week on Buckeye Talk, and then the day after it came out of the poll asking people what they thought the biggest need in Ohio State's recruiting class for 2019 was. Number one, by far, is offensive line. I got about 46%, followed by quarterback, wide receiver, and then I had another option where people had some interesting responses. Someone said fullback was a need. Someone said long snapper. Someone else said field goal kicker. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do one of these every week. Look for every Thursday morning after Buckeye Talk. We're going to pull a topic out of the podcast. It may not necessarily be the main topic like it will be this week, but look for something that you'll have a chance to vote on, you know, cast your vote, comment in our comment section in the post, and every week we'll all read off the results.
So is this definitely going to be the poll this week?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we have to vote because the readers are going to have to click a little poll button, and there's not going to be a button for kind of both. I don't know. You're going to have two choices, Braxton or JT. That's it. If you don't know, you don't get to vote.
Yes.
So what's our answer? What little button would we click?
I'd click JT.
I'm also taking JT.
Are you, as you're clicking JT, are you doing so without hesitation? Or is there some part of you that's like, well, or it's like, no, of course it's JT.
Yeah, I think as you're going to click the button, like who do you think's better? Like, I think clearly Braxton Miller's a better football player, but that's not the question. So I think I click JT with a good amount of confidence.
I admit when we were getting ready to do this, I thought about, you know, overnight, kind of going into the morning, who I would pick, and I kind of, just as we sat down, I kind of thought, pick JT by a hair. It's close.
Okay, so you're close. Okay.
It's close, but I think JT, with his postseason accolades, has done just enough to edge Braxton.
Urban Meyer has made the point repeatedly that without Braxton Miller, they would have been dead when he got here. That they had, especially in 2012, and they were sort of getting it together in 2013. But they went 12-0. In 2012, with basically no offense, the way Urban Meyer tells it. They did not, he called the receivers a clown show, like they didn't know what they were doing, and they just gave the ball to Braxton Miller and said, here, go do something. And they went 12-0. They went 12-0 the year after they went 6-7. They went 12-0 under the cloud of a bowl ban that had nothing to do with Urban Meyer or Braxton Miller or any of the guys on that team. They went 12-0 at a time when it was very possible for the Ohio State football program to be teetering on the brink of these NCAA violations, this bowl ban, the minor recruiting sanctions they had, is going to knock this program back. Not forever, but for a little bit, Ohio State's not going to be Ohio State. And they went 12-0. And if they if JT Barrett had been the quarterback that year, I don't think they would have gone 12-0. I don't know that there's many quarterbacks in recent college football history who could have gone 12-0 that team. That year, he was the exact right guy for that situation, for what the rest of the roster looked like, for what the offensive coaches wanted to do or were trying to figure out what to do, for what the Big Ten was at that time. He was different. He was unique. And he saved them. Urban Meyer saved Ohio State football. That's the title of the stage play that I'm working on. Coming to your local community theater. Urban Meyer saved Ohio State football is the title of the play. But you know who the star is? The star is Braxton Miller.
Yeah.
He's on stage every minute. He has a ton of lines. It's practically a one-man show. The title is Urban Meyer Saved Ohio State Football. It's practically a one-man show about Braxton Miller. So I think there's a Braxton Miller argument. It depends. All of this legacy stuff, every discussion with legacy, and I think legacy discussions can at the same time be fun and interesting and also incredibly annoying and beside the point. And this relates to LeBron and MJ and all the stuff that people always want to talk about with legacy. Who's better, who's not, ranking, all this stuff. It's like everybody's great. They're all great, and they're great in different ways. But since we like to rank, and ranking's fine, I absolutely think you can make a case for Braxton. But I think right now it's hard to vote against JT, but get back to me when Dwayne Haskins leads Ohio State to a national title this year, and I might change my answer. So for now, I'll click JT. But depending what the 2018 football season looks like, a year from now, I might click Braxton. And when we talk about legacy, that's really what we mean.
Yep.
Legacy now won't be the same as legacy 5 years from now, the same as legacy 20 years from now. So right now, I think JT's legacy is better, but I think it's very possible that in the annals of Ohio State football, let me ask you this question. Is Ted Ginn Jr. the leading receiver in the history of Ohio State football? Not even close.
No.
But Ted Ginn Jr. is a guy that you'll always tell stories about. Ted Ginn Jr. is a guy who was unlike anyone else. Ted Ginn Jr. is a guy that if he had decided to stick around, and if he had maybe played in a different offense, could have put, but the individual things he did, the talent he had, the way he played the game, Ted Ginn's legacy at Ohio State is unlike anybody. And I think Braxton is like that. And I'm not going to the record books for that. I'm not going to the record books to see where Ted Ginn ranks in all-time receiving yards compared to Joey Galloway and Santonio Holmes and Michael Thomas and Devin Smith and everybody else we want to talk about. I'm talking about the Ted Ginn Jr. you saw on the field, the things he did that go beyond compiling stats. So I think that's the Braxton case. And it's just that at the moment he's up against, in this equation, he's up against a guy who set every record in the book.
I don't mean to take this into a tangent, but in a weird way, I feel like Ted Ginn and Braxton Miller are almost in the same kind of legacy, because you think about it, Ted Ginn's college career ended the same way Braxton Miller's quarterbacking career ended, on an injury, because we all remember Ted Ginn had that kickoff return to start the game against Florida in the national championship game. Then he gets hurt. I believe it was Antonio Smith that stepped on his ankle and ended his game.
Roy Hall.
I'm getting my guys confused from 06.
It's all right.
But in a way, it's the same thing, because Ted Ginn was electrifying. We all remember what he did as a punt returner. We all remember what he did, you know. I believe he took some snaps from shotgun at one point, or some weird trick formation, I don't know, but he was a different kind of receiver I thought was ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have won. I think that'll be one of the ultimate Ohio State what ifs. What if he doesn't get hurt on that kickoff return against Florida? I don't know if they win, but that game could have been very different if Ted Ginn was healthy. And we could have the same question of what 2014 is like if Braxton Miller doesn't get hurt in the Orange Bowl and then has the subsequent injury in the summer that knocks him out of that season.
Which, again, all goes back to the what ifs. I think most of the time, if you are great and you leave them dangling on a what if, it adds to your legacy.
Yep.
All right, what do we got? We want to do. Do we want to do the? So my understanding, and I will admit, I wasn't here last week. I did not have a chance to listen to the podcast yet that you two did last week. But I understand we got a 1-star review based on my tangents.
Yep. We also got a 4-star review because the person who gave 4 stars doesn't like you.
Really?
And this guy's a pastor too.
A pastor doesn't like me?
Pastor Mike Hauser.
Oh, I know that guy. No, I'm just kidding. I missed that. So you read that. What did he say about me?
He said,
I have to listen to these podcasts.
He said, way too much digression and off-topic discussion, parentheses, how long comparing past girlfriends to past coaching jobs, close parentheses, makes this podcast way too long.
That's the 1-star guy.
Oh, that's the 1-star guy.
I consider his 1-star review invalid because that was the first podcast he listened to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You need to listen to 3. And then we can get into the fart of the week.
But who's... No. I still want to talk about tangents. I want to talk about people who don't like me. Who's the 4-star guy who didn't like me?
That's the pastor.
Yeah.
What did he say?
I'll read the little snippet. The first paragraph is kind of explaining his thoughts about it. He's like, I love hearing Bill and Tim, but being real, Doug can get on my nerves. He seems to dictate every podcast and how it goes, but I think Bill and Tim are the most informed and the most intriguing. Not blasting him, but simply telling you guys how I feel. I will continue to listen, but my only request would be settle down, Doug, and stop his tangents and talk more football.
Stick to sports.
Yeah.
Hashtag stick to sports.
Man of God. Man of God.
Man of the cloth.
All right. I'm taking your feedback into consideration, and I'm going to ignore it. No, I'm just kidding.
Well,
anyway, so I wanted to talk about my favorite snacks at Disney World for 20 minutes, and then we'll get to recruiting.
All right.
Well, so they have just Tim. Sorry. I want to do 20 minutes on Disney World popsicles, and then we'll get to the thing.
I'm sorry.
All right, read the fart.
Well, I was just going to say that SC Buck was contradicting the pastor. He says also Doug needs to keep up the rants to keep the 5-star status.
Yeah, we got far more. We want Doug tangents than we got.
Okay.
Priest telling
yeah,
us.
It's.
That's good. Okay. All right. I'll be me. What? So are there any more new ones?
Well, here's the fart of the week comes from Holly Lizard. I'm guessing the title is A Father Talks OSU Football with His Sons. Kind Father Doug talks turkey with his sons Ari and Tim in a sweet and facts-oriented podcast. Can I just say I've been here since August and people still think Ari's on the podcast?
But if they think you're Ari. They think Bill's Ari. They said Ari and Tim.
I could be Ari.
Yeah, we need to like keep a tally of who gets called Ari the most. Is it Bill or is it me? We need to keep a tally.
As long as it's not me, I'm fine either way.
Let's keep a running tally. But anyway, let's talk Disney World.
No, I don't want to talk Disney World. Nobody cares about that. Harry Miller. What are we at class-wise? Let's do some talk, and we'll get to your questions after this. We want to talk about... Because, Tim, you made a point before we started about Ohio State's overall ranking. So let's talk about that. But let's also talk about the Harry Miller commit. Let's talk about Harry Miller first. And then let's use that as a chance to catch up everybody on where the 2019 class stands.
Well, last week when Bill and I talked recruiting, we both said Harry Miller was very likely to join the class. And he ended up joining Sunday. The interesting thing about Miller, he was supposed to go on a mission trip to Nicaragua next month where he was going to make his announcement. That for Ohio State, there's a picture that he tweeted out of a little cardboard sign that says committed, and he's got a bunch of Ohio State t-shirts, which I don't know if this was the plan or not, if he was going to offer them to the children in Nicaragua on his mission trip, and that's how he's going to make his announcement, obviously, but that trip didn't happen. So Sunday, 2 days after he was in Columbus to visit unofficially during the camp with his mother, he decides he wants to go ahead and commit to Ohio State.
That would have been a great way to commit.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen videos and different things like that. I think that is a really cool way to do it. And that speaks to the kind of kid Harry Miller is. You know, he's very intelligent kid. He's got a 4.0 GPA, very smart. And not just smart, this is a kid who's an outstanding football player. Number 36 in 247 Sports Composite. He's the number two center. And I wrote about it. This compares to the Garrett Wilson commit in a way because they got him out of a state that features a program that is locking down the state.
Right.
Because Georgia has owned the state of Georgia ever since Kirby Smart got there. Let me pull up the number.
Is there a secret connection here?
Not that I know of, no.
Yeah, the stat I want to pull up, last year Georgia signed 5 of the top 6 players in the state of Georgia and 4 of the top 6 in 2017. And it's kind of a statement, like I said with Wilson, Ohio State's not going to go away from going into these states. They're not going to be able to pull out great players all the time like Raekwon McMillan and Von Bell, but it's important for them to continue to compete in there because you never know when you're going to get a kid like Harry Miller or Garrett Wilson out of these states.
So does this kid feel like a 3-year starter at center to you guys?
Well, I think it's interesting because I got Matthew Jones last year, and Matthew Jones is a highly rated 4-star center as well. And obviously, if you can play center, you can probably play guard too. I think what this sets up now is like who is the center of the future? Because Harry Miller is not going to sit behind Matthew Jones for 3 years or vice versa. So like, which one of those guys has to be a guard now? I think is interesting. But yeah, I think he's. I mean, they lose a lot on the offensive line.
And
so, I mean, I don't think he'll start as a freshman. We've talked about that before, but yeah, I think he's a 3-year starter.
And if Isaiah Prince is the right tackle, you're going to lose 3/5 to the offensive line no matter what next year because you have Brady Taylor, Demetrius Knox, and Isaiah Prince who are all gone after the season. Michael Jordan will be a senior next year. So that 4/5 of your offensive line that are juniors or older. And what this does set up, in addition to kind of what Bill said, they've got some depth on the interior line now. You mentioned Matthew Jones, Josh Myers, and Wyatt Davis. Now you add in Harry Miller, who I wrote about, is a guy that at Buford, his high school in Georgia, Buford, Georgia, they played him all over the place. You know, they played him at tackle, they played him at guard. He was originally ranked as a tackle, but now he's ranked as a center. So he seems like a guy that Ohio State could play pretty much anywhere on the offensive line, but center seems like probably his best position.
On paper, like their individual player ranking, he is the 3rd best offensive lineman of the Urban Meyer era. Behind Nicholas Petit-Frere and Wyatt Davis.
Interesting. And this is, again, I feel like Michael Jordan's really good, but I feel like at times their interior offensive line recruiting had suffered a bit. And this goes back to the story we always have talked about and never done about the interior offensive line and Guardapalooza and how important their guard play was in 2014.
Yeah.
But even like, again, in recruits, like Pat Elflein was an under the radar recruit who turned out to be awesome. And Billy Price was a big time recruit, but they also thought he might play defense.
Yeah.
Like this is in Wyatt Davis, Josh Myers, Matthew Jones, and Harry Miller. We're now talking about 4 big time recruits who were recruited as interior offensive linemen, who were never going to play defense, and really were never in the mix to be tackles, right?
Yeah, and I think, like, I just gave you where Harry Miller ranks, like, in the list of River Meyer offensive line recruits. Wyatt Davis, Harry Miller, Josh Myers, and Matthew Jones are all in the top 6 of best offensive line recruits signed by River Meyer.
And that's recent interior offensive line guys. This is a change. Is it coincidental or is it like, hey, we need better guards?
Yeah, I think they need better guards. I think Greg Studrawa was a better recruiter than Ed Warner. Ed Warner's a better offensive line coach, but Studrawa was a better recruiter. So I think that's part of it too. But yeah, it's been a position. It goes hand in hand sort of with just the increased level of their recruiting in general, I think. Because I bet if you went across the board position by position, you might find that to be the case for a lot of them. Recent guys being among the best they've recruited at the position. But yeah, it was a need. It was that 2015 class. Like, whenever Meyer always talked about the 2015 class being a miss and offensive line misses in recruiting, he was talking about interior.
Yep.
He wasn't talking about tackles. So this was it was a need compounded by the idea that they're just recruiting a little better now.
And it's easy, I think, for a lot of people to focus on tackles when you talk about offensive line recruiting. They get more attention. Like, when you get a 5-star tackle, that's like a huge deal. And it feels like sometimes And I think maybe this is the mistake. It feels like sometimes in the past that it could be like if you recruited a big-time tackle and he wasn't quite as good as you thought he was, he'd be a guard.
Yeah.
And I think there's a difference between your starting guards being guys who were like, not failed, failed the wrong word, but I'm going to use it, that your starting guards are failed tackles or failed tackle recruits, mm-hmm. as opposed to your guards being 4- and 5-star guys who were interior offensive linemen. And I know Myers played tackle in high school, but everybody always pretty much projected him as a guard, right?
Yeah.
So guys that, even if they played tackle in high school, there were no illusions about, well, we'll try, we want him to be a tackle, and if he doesn't make it, he'll be a guard. It's like, we are recruiting interior offensive linemen who know how to play interior offensive line and are coming here to play interior offensive line and are really good at that. To me, it's the same discussion as recruiting athletes and trying to make them receivers as opposed to recruiting guys who can play receiver. And that's, as you've written and talked about many times, that's another change we've seen where they've gotten away from just trying to turn good athletes into receivers, and now they're recruiting receivers. Yep. So to me, Wyatt Davis and Harry Miller and Matthew Jones are Austin Mack and Trayvon Grimes and Jalen Harris.
Yeah.
Makes sense. And that is a change. That is, and it seems like a good one. And it seems like not a coincidental one. It seems like that is something that they have done with purpose to go after and get some of these top-tier interior offensive line recruits.
It's just like what's happening in the NFL, the rebirth of the guard position, because Quentin Nelson, a guard from Notre Dame, was the number 6 pick in the draft. He was drafted, I believe, before an offensive tackle was.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, it is. We really need to write Gardapalooza, yeah. I mean, because you can peg it off. We could peg Gardapalooza off Harry Miller if we wanted to.
Yeah, I'm just looking now because I made the point about Jones and Miller and who's going to be the center of the future. I don't think it's 100% off the table that Josh Myers is a starting center next year.
Oh, yeah, we thought there might be a chance Josh Myers was a starting center this year.
No, that's what I mean.
Oh, you mean 2018? Oh, you still think that...
Yeah, I feel like I came out of the spring feeling very, very strongly that it was going to be Brady Taylor. And if you ask me today, I still think it's going to be him, but I don't think it's 100% going to be him. I think the door is open for Josh Myers. I think you're talking about a redshirt freshman starter at center with Matthew Jones and Harry Miller coming behind them, and then like that just makes the position battle all the more intriguing. And I don't know, you know, why. And then you have, if he's the center, then you have Wyatt Davis, Harry Miller, Matthew Jones, all guys vying to be starting guards for a team that's going to has 1, 2, 3, 4 seniors on the offensive line, and Michael Jordan as a starter, third-year starter, who I think could very well leave after this season. I grabbed Phil Steele when you mentioned the name Michael Jordan. He does his top draft eligible players. Michael Jordan is a number 3 guard.
Yeah. In a world, as Tim just mentioned, where guards, good guards, seem to matter more than ever in the NFL.
That's why the Browns paid a ton of money to Kevin Zeitler.
I mean, the Cowboys have built, I know, what, right, that, is it Zach Martin? Is that the Cowboys guy? Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
and Travis Frederick, mm-hmm. interior offensive line. I mean, tackles always matter, but... I think people are very interested in sort of like pass rushing defensive tackles, get pressure up the middle, and as a result, you're very interested in athletic interior offensive linemen who can pull and get out in the run game, but also can negate some of those Aaron Donald type interior pass rushers that everybody wants now too. So
it's all the subtle evolutions of football.
It is. Gardapalooza. We'll do it. It's on the list. As long as it's on the list, it doesn't matter if we ever actually write it.
On the list. There'll be stuff, because I think Wisconsin will probably send both of its starting guards to like Big Ten Media Day.
Okay.
So I think there'll be some good guys to talk to in Chicago.
So Gardapalooza is on your list for Big Ten Media Days? Yeah. Which they've announced, by the way, July 23rd and 24th. If you want to go to the Big Ten meetings on July 24th, is a Tuesday. That's when the Big Ten luncheon is. It's like a big thing that a lot of college football fans, a lot of Big Ten fans show up at. They have a luncheon. They have one of the seniors in the Big Ten speak on behalf of all the players. They have all the coaches up there. I think you get chicken. Is it chicken?
I never had the dinner. I stood in the room one time and watched people eat it, and it looked very good.
Yeah. So you can go. if you want to go, if you've never, haven't been to Chicago for a while and you want to get into football season, it's not a bad thing to do. So you try to get tickets if you want. We'll be there, maybe at the luncheon, but you can say hi. Maybe we'll do a Buckeye Talk from there. If you go, tell us, and we'll have you on the show. There. Yeah,
yeah, because it'll be Monday, Tuesday, so we'll have to do a Buckeye Talk from there unless we do one driving back.
So we'll knock out the Buckeye Talk from Big Ten Media Days before we leave.
We did one last year. It was Ari's last Buckeye Talk.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We recorded it, like, on their fake radio row.
Oh, yeah. Ari was crying.
Did you guys play taps at the end for Ari?
Yeah. And then we killed him.
Even though people think he's still here.
Yeah, the ghost of Ari and still inhabits the podcast. All right. Quick reminder for you guys to get subscribed to all of our podcasts at Cleveland.com. Wine and Gold Podcast is going to keep going, even though the Cavs are done. And guess what? You need to be listening to that because they're going to tell you where LeBron's going to go.
Yeah, now the Cavs are interesting.
Yeah. So it's like, you knew they were going to get swept, but it's like, now what? So you've got to listen to Joe Vardon and Chris Fedor talk about that. The Wine and Gold Podcast. Get subscribed to that wherever you subscribe to Buckeye Talk and other fine podcasts. Orange and Brown Talk. That's the Browns. Browns are in mini camps. Things are heating up. Everybody's getting excited. People are jumping in lakes. Mary Kay Cabot, Dan Labbe. Listen to them. Get subscribed to that. Cleveland Baseball Talk. Joe Noga. Paul Hoynes breaking down the Indians, who remain in first place in the worst division in baseball. The Indians are interesting. They're going to make moves at the trade deadline. They're a World Series contender with a gaping problem. That's interesting. What's the other one? Oh, Takes by the Lake. That's my podcast. And this week I'll be talking to Dave Zirin, who wrote a book about Jim Brown. So that will be up on Friday. Unless I put it up early. That'll be up this week on Takes by the Lake. Again, get subscribed separately to all of those Cleveland.com podcasts. And you can always find, if you ever get confused, you can find all of our podcasts at Cleveland.com/podcasts. Questions?
From May 28th, Connor Bailey, and I think we teased this one too, he gave us a list of JT's single game and season records, and he wants to know if we think whether or not what we think of Dwayne Haskins' ability to surpass those eventually.
Ooh.
So I think we can just do like yes or no, right? We don't have to, I don't think
we can do a 40-minute discussion about
right.
it. Right, yeah.
Okay. Pass completions in a season, JT's record is 233. Will Dwayne Haskins break that record?
Yes.
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 Passing touchdowns in a game is 6. Will Dwayne Haskins break that record?
No.
I say no.
I think yes.
7's a lot. 7's a lot. I think you can tie it. It's like if you've thrown 6 touchdown passes, you're probably up by 90.
Right.
And I don't know if you're still in the game. Passing touchdowns in a season, 34.
Yes.
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 Boy, JT's legacy is going down the toilet already.
Total offense in a season, 3,772. That's combined passing and rushing.
No.
No. I think no, because obviously we know he's not going to run, but I just think they're going to also... I think the running backs are going to be very involved and take a lot of the yardage.
I think I agree with that.
I mean, people throw for 4,000 yards all the time.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, even if he only runs for 200, for him to throw for 3,600 and run for 200 is certainly on the table. That more or less boils down to, I mean, again, a lot of this stuff is not just a question. It's not only a discussion about Dwayne Haskins. It's a discussion about Ryan Day and Ryan Day's play calling and Ryan Day's offense and the ability of his offense to be explosive. And it's a conversation about the backup quarterback and how long Urban Meyer is going to keep people in games. I think if Joe Burrow was still around, all these things would be much more difficult for Dwayne Haskins to attain. But I'm curious to see, like, how is he going to give Tate Martell? I mean, Urban keeps guys in. Urban kept JT in a lot. But yet we still saw Dwayne Haskins enough last year because they had enough blowouts. When's Tate Martell going to come into blowouts? Is he going to be in a hurry to get Tate Martell reps and get him in games? Or since Dwayne Haskins is a first-year starter, is he going to want Dwayne Haskins to get important reps against Oregon State and Rutgers early on because he's got to get Dwayne Haskins ready for TCU? And then is he going to get big-time reps against Tulane because he's got to get Dwayne Haskins ready for Penn State. Like, Dwayne Haskins might play until 2 minutes left in the game for the whole first month. The guy needs reps. The guy has two huge games in the first 6 weeks, and he needs reps. He might break all these records in the first half of the season.
I've changed my mind. I think he can do it. There were 8 quarterbacks who threw for 4,000 yards last year, 3 of them in the Power 5, 2 of them in the state of Oklahoma. I think Dwayne Haskins like might rush for about 400-ish yards, 400 to 500 yards, just based off even scrambling alone and then the handful of design runs they do with him. So it's just a matter of can he throw for 3,400, 3,500 yards, and I think he can. JT last year threw for 3,053 yards. I think just the way with the offense is going, that Dwayne Haskins will be a 3,000-yard passer, and I think like significantly better than JT in terms of total passing yards. So I think he gets there. And it's not, we're not saying next year. The question was eventually, not just in 2018.
Although it might have to be just in 2018, depending how things go. It's like, if he breaks him in 2018, yeah, right. Then he might not be here in 2019. If he does not break them in 2018, then maybe he will be here in 2019.
Touchdowns responsible for in a game, 7.
No.
I already said he'd throw for 7, I guess, so yes.
I'll say no. Touchdowns responsible for in a season, 45.
No.
No.
Because, like, JT, I mean, what JT's 45, what is that, like 32 passing and 13 rushing or something?
It was 34 passing and, 34 passing and 11 rushing.
I mean, Dwayne, how many rushing touchdowns is Dwayne Haskins going to have this year? 3?
Maybe. I was going to say 2.
Yeah, I think not many. I think when they're, well, I don't know. It's hard to get a gauge of, I think. We don't know what they're going to do with him in short yardage. Are they going to bring in Tate Martell? Are they going to give it to the running back? Or are they actually going to let him in there, like, run the QB power to score a touchdown like JT Barrett did 9,000 times in his career?
Right.
I don't think the answer is a definite no on that.
Because the one thing is it going to be a read? Are they going to have a read option on the goal line? And they're all in those – it's the counterintuitive thing, right, which we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Because he's not as dangerous of a runner – the whole defense is going to go to J.K. Dobbins or Mike Weber, which might leave Dwayne Haskins to walk into the end zone 8 times if the whole defense is selling out for the guy who's more dangerous on 2nd and goal from the 2. And J.T. had a couple of those. I mean, when J.T. had his rushing touchdowns, every now and then he'd have one of those rushing touchdowns where like he could have crawled in if he wanted to because the whole defense was on the running back.
I think Dwayne Haskins in his career will eclipse that 45 touchdowns. Because if he can throw 40, I think he can walk in for 5.
You have the CFB stats site up?
Yeah.
How many guys threw for 40 touchdowns last year?
2. Drew Lock and Baker Mayfield.
I mean, it's one of those things that's like the discussion is like, well,
the year before that, 6 guys did.
If we think, well, if Dwayne Haskins can be the best quarterback in the country, then he can break all these records. But I mean, I'm not like
can't he? Like, is it
like I'm not making fun of you because it's like I think that's what we think his upside is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, it's like, well, if he wins the Heisman, will he have scored 45 touchdowns? I still think no, because I think that's a hard combination because there's so many rushing touchdowns for JT. And he won't have double figure rushing touchdowns. So if he's gonna have even if he has 8, now he's gotta throw for 37, he's gotta throw for 38 touchdowns with 8 rushing touchdowns to break it. That's a lot of touchdowns. It's a lot of touchdowns.
Last one. Games with 300 yards of offense. JT had 7. That was his record in 2014. Combined passing and rushing.
Boy. Because, again, it's going to have to be mostly passing.
Yeah.
But I also think, like, do you think it's on the table that, like, Dwayne Haskins is going to throw for, like, 371 yards against Oregon State?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that even, like, I think we might get into a world where it's, like, a Dwayne Haskins okay game is throwing for, like, 306. You know what I mean? That like Dwayne Haskins, like oh, how was Dwayne Haskins? How did Dwayne Haskins do against Maryland? It's like, oh, he had a pretty good game. What was he? Oh, he was 24 of 38 for 307 yards. And, like, that's not great in the context of a Dwayne Haskins season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or is a 24 for 38 for 307 yards, is that great no matter what? Or is that just like, you know, he ran the offense and he made some throws, he missed some throws, you know?
Yeah. Sorry, I was looking at I was looking at Deshaun Watson's numbers because I feel like that might be a decent comparison for Dwayne Haskins.
If you put that scenario's in the okay column, then you put him in the Baker Mayfield category where Ohio State's pretty much the number one team in the college football playoff rankings, and they're going to go play for the national championship, which we expect.
And again, like if he only plays a half, that's different. But as long as he plays like mostly a full game. Is he going to have a game where he's 19 of 29 for 187 yards?
No.
Like, that can't, like, there's no, like, if, I don't even, like, don't if that so. Had to happen, then that means that J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber each ran for 160 yards.
Yeah.
Because they only threw for 187, but they ran for 320, and they got the 500 yards offense. But I just don't see that. And maybe it'll happen once, but the idea that he'll have more than seven games with 300 yards offense, I mean, I think he might have 10.
Yeah, I think he could have 10. I think he's going to average. I think he'll average between 250 and 300 yards game passing, and then I think it's not crazy for him to get 30 to 50 yards rushing per game, not the 100 that JT routinely got, but I think that math is pretty easy to get to.
Yeah. And again, it's just a lot of it is based on what the offense is going to look like and how defenses are going to play them and what Ryan Day is going to ask them to do. But I think if you think a decently large – and forget the downfield passing for the moment, which I think everybody believes is going to be more prevalent and more successful. Because maybe not more prevalent, but more successful, because they actually tried it a decent amount of the time last year and just missed on some of them.
Yeah.
But I just think we think there's going to be a lot of those – 4-yard quick passes to Paris Campbell and DeMario McCall, and Dwayne Haskins is going to make a lot of money on those.
I always get nervous when I see these questions that could have 30-minute answers and check the time. Christian Zylstra asks on May 22nd. He said, we measure success by titles won, and Urban won 2 titles at Florida, 1 so far at Ohio State. But given all the other factors, program culture, winning percentage, etc., is it fair to say his tenure at Ohio State has already been more successful than his tenure at Florida?
Oh, boy. That sounds like a more. I think we should do a lot of that because it's 6 years in now. So there's a lot of straight comparisons to make. He has 6 years at Florida. Boy, oh, boy.
I mean, so he is 73-8 at Ohio State. In his 6 years at Florida, he was 65-15. He's won 2 Big Ten titles, right? Yeah, he's won 2 Big Ten championships here. At Florida, he won 1-2. Yeah, 2. He also won 2.
And the 2 years he won the title at Florida, he won the national
championship. Yeah.
Is it more successful? I don't know how to answer that. And I was going to say, because here's part of the answer. But the interesting thing is that it applies to Urban at both places. And it applies to Urban probably more than it applies to any other coach in the era. Boy, this is – I'm going to write this down too. Boy, this is a good one. I'm writing this like this week. Okay. Here's my comparison.
I saw what you wrote down and I'm excited.
Urban is LeBron. Each with 3 titles. 2 of them in Florida. 1 of them in Ohio. And guess what that makes? Nick Saban is the Warriors.
Ooh.
Because if you wiped out... It's a dynasty.
Yeah.
There is a dynasty that doesn't necessarily exist in every era. And if those dynasties didn't exist, both LeBron and Urban would have more titles.
Yeah. I think the only difference between the comparisons is that LeBron didn't play Golden State when he was in Miami.
Right.
But I still think it makes sense.
And I feel like Urban... So Urban in 06.
But he went to Miami because he couldn't beat Boston, right?
Yeah.
So Like, there was another dynasty. It just was the dynasty change.
Well, but the dynasty. Well, but the
not dynasty, but super
team. Right.
Yeah.
But Saban started at Bama in 07. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was 07 because I believe it was the second year they played Florida in the SEC championship game and lost to Tim Tebow. And then 09 was the year they blew him out.
So Urban got one title at Florida pre-Saban, and he got his second title at Florida as Saban was ramping up. Mm-hmm. And then he stopped getting titles because of Saban.
Yes.
And then he did beat Saban once head-to-head to get the one more title, just like LeBron beat Golden State once. And it's not as direct, but Alabama absolutely kept Ohio State out of the playoff last year. It was a direct head-to-head comparison.
Yep. Oh.
I think it's the only disappointing part thing about the Urban era because we've only gotten one round of Urban Saban. You kind of thought that when Urban Meyer got to Ohio State, we'd have it every year, and we've only gotten it once in six.
Right. They've played head-to-head, I guess, three times when it mattered, right?
Yeah, there was a regular
season. 08 and 09 mm-hmm. in the SEC championships, yep. and they split them. And the winner each time won the national title, mm-hmm. and then in here, obviously, in the 2014 playoff. Yes. But we have not. But whereas LeBron has gone head-to-head against the Warriors four times. Well, that's the one difference. But so LeBron's gone head, as you said, LeBron didn't have the Warriors when he was in Florida. So LeBron's gone head-to-head against his primary challenger four times, and Urban's gone head-to-head against his primary challenger three times.
Yeah.
And LeBron beat him once, and Urban beat him twice. So it's not perfect, but it's pretty good. What's the question? Was that a tangent? That was a football tangent.
I know, but I thought it was an interesting
I think theory. The question was, like, do you consider this more his tenure at Ohio State more of a success? Something along those lines.
Like, both are incredibly successful, but I would say no.
I mean, it certainly depends on how you define it, and like it's in some ways it feels almost like the Jordan LeBron argument. It's like, oh, rings, like whatever. He had two there, he has one here. And you would never get Urban to answer this question, but I think like from a personal standpoint, it probably is. He's like in a much better place, I think, as like a human being than he was back then. I think his program is running a little more smoothly than it was there. People always talk about all the arrests he had with players at Florida. He hasn't had very many legal troubles here with his Ohio State team.
I changed my mind. Yes. You're convincing me. Continue.
I think a lot of the things are similar. He recruited, I think, more consistently at a higher level. Maybe it was a similar level. He had the number one recruiting class in the nation, I think, one year at Florida.
Yeah, I believe it was the 2010 class, because that was the year when he stepped down and then came back. And
yeah, they always say Urban left a cupboard bare, and like the class he left in 2010 had like 9 5-star prostects in it.
And he did. He had that class. Even the class they built everything on. He had the class where he got the top player from like 6 or 7 different states.
Yeah. So I think there's probably an argument he made that his recruiting was a little better at Florida than it's been so far at Ohio State. But now he's getting it back to a similar point now at Ohio State with the last two recruiting classes. But I think from like a program health standpoint, this is more successful.
I think that's right. I think program health and personal health. After 6 years at Florida, he was burned out. He was burned out after 5 years at Florida and came back anyway for year six. He's far from burned out here. So he's done basically the same thing. He's better. I mean, he's 73-8 versus 65-15. So he has 7 fewer losses. So he's winning more during the regular season. Part of that's competition. Mm-hmm. But he's winning more. He has 1 title versus 2. The only thing that falls short is titles, is national titles.
Right.
But I think he has done basically. And the final answer is the success is basically the same, but the success he's had at Ohio State has been done at less of a cost to him personally and with less of a cost to having to, I don't know what the right word is, cut corners, sacrifice some whatever the arrests and the problems at Florida are part of his legacy at Florida. You cannot talk about his time at Florida without that coming up. People bring it up immediately. People bring it up so fast that it leaked over to his Ohio State tenure, when frankly, that just has not been an issue at Ohio State, like anywhere close to the same way. Every program's going to have something here or there. But I think that that point is well taken.
He had fewer than 10 wins three times at Florida. His first year they won 9. 2007 they won 9. His last year they won 8. He's had at least 11 wins every year at Ohio State. He's finished at least tied for first place in his division every year at Ohio State. And he had a second place finish, a third place finish, and a second place finish in his own division while in Florida. Actually, like now that you like look at the numbers and think about all that stuff, I actually don't even know if it's a conversation.
I mean, the only conversation is national titles.
Rings. Yeah.
Yeah. I admit I was initially thinking no, but you swayed me a little bit, not just, you know, just his state of being, but the fact that, like you said, Bill, I actually looked at the numbers too, the fact that Ohio State's been more consistent, just getting double-digit wins every year. You don't have the dips in the record like in 2007 when they won 9 games, even though they had the Heisman Trophy winner in Tim Tebow. In 2010, they only win 8 games in his final season. That hasn't happened at Ohio State. It's been consistent 10 or 11 wins every year.
His bowl record at Florida was better. He was 5-1 in bowl games at Florida. At Ohio State, he's 3-2, 4-2 if you count the national title game as bowl game in 14.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that comparison. We'll do that comparison. Some straight head-to-head 6-year comparisons.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. Whose question was that?
That was, I just deleted it. Christian Zylstra.
That's a great question, Christian.
Yeah. And like this, I guess, kind of bleeds into it. We've talked about it before. We've talked about it a lot before. But Michael Ennio says, what do you guys think is Urban's remaining shelf life at Ohio State? Is this his final destination? Do you think when he decides to leave, it will be with a successor in mind or more out of the blue? He also asked what we thought about Chili's recent data breach. I didn't know about that. Question was for May 22nd.
Data breach?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw people making, like, I want my data back jokes. I remember that. I think we have reached the point with Urban, and this was not the expectation when he got here. I think there was reasonably a lot of talk, given how things ended at Florida. There was reasonably a lot of talk when he got to Ohio State about shelf life. How long would they have him? If you would have asked any Ohio State fan back then, Florida had him 6 years, would you take 6 years? They would have said yes. Like if you told Ohio State fans when he got hired, you're getting him for 6, is that okay? You know, will you take a guaranteed 6? People said, well, we take a guaranteed 6. I think he is at the point right now where the discussion about Urban Meyer's shelf life, both at Ohio State and overall as a coach. So whether you're talking about, is he going to retire or is he going to take the Dallas Cowboys job, as I always like to bring up, is no different than any other coach. And so, of course, like you can play the guessing game of a guy in his mid-50s. Is he going to retire when he's 65? Is he going to retire when he's 70? Is he going to retire when he's 62? Is a great coach going to take an NFL opportunity once he's proven everything he can prove at the college level? But I just think the only thing that changes with great college coaches in that discussion is how old they are. And so, like, the discussion with Dabo would be different just because he's younger than Urban. But there's nothing else there that would change that discussion. Like, Jim Harbaugh, I think, is more of a discussion on that just because of his NFL past. But anybody else who's just like, I mean, are you worried about James Franklin's shelf life at Penn State? Are people worried about, I don't even know, like Tom Herman's shelf life at Texas? Are people worried about Willie Taggart's shelf life at Florida State? Are people worried about, you know, Gus Malzahn's shelf life at Auburn? I mean, because people thought he was going to get fired. But, you know, like, it's just, well, a guy might retire when he gets in his 60s, and a guy might take an NFL job if he ever gets a great offer. But I do not think there's anything else hanging over Urban at this point in time. And I think when he got hired at Ohio State, there was something hanging over his head. So I think it's just a generic shelf life question now. And then that's just, you don't know. Like I still believe, sure. It's the thing I've always said. Nick, their last kid is going to college in the fall. They're empty nesters. That's different than having kids in the house. You're hearing the conversation now with LeBron about how much family matters when you have kids in school. Any person with a job who has kids in school, whether or not you move, the kids matter a lot. When that is removed from the equation, I just think it changes things. But So my answer is I don't know, but I think if there was a time, maybe right up until this point, where Ohio State fans were maybe reasonably extra worried about that, there's no reason to be extra worried about it now.
I agree. Do you think he leaves with a successor in mind? Like, is he going to appoint his successor? Like, is there going to be a, I don't know, Bob Stoops, Lincoln Riley kind of thing? Or people thought Muschamp was going to take over for Mac Brown, right?
I think that's proven to fail. That's been a failure. Yeah. I think it hasn't. There was a time when coaches in waiting were the whole thing. I don't think he's going to leave like Stoops left, like sort of like what? Like out of the blue, up, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, like I think it'll just be more like a normal retirement. And then there'll be a national search and there'll be a bunch of great coaches who want to be the next coach at Ohio State. So, no. Because I like who does that? Like who, like what, like that doesn't.
Yeah, that's not how it works. I don't think, and who knows, like when he leaves, what his staff will look like. I have no idea, but
yeah,
I can't imagine. Like, I don't know if depending on how far away it is. Like, I think if like Ryan Day were to leave and get a head coaching job somewhere and be good, and like he could be in the mix. Tom Herman could be in the mix. Matt Campbell's going to be the head coach at Ohio State.
Yeah, but I think
it would have to be someone who would like leave his staff, go be a head coach somewhere, be successful. I can't imagine he would just promote an assistant.
But it's just because you don't know what is going to happen. It's like, again, a couple years ago when we had this discussion, it'd be like, oh, Tom Herman's the head coach at Texas. Like, Tom Herman's not going to leave being the head coach at Texas to come to Ohio State. So Tom Herman is not going to be Urban Meyer's successor.
What if Tom Herman gets fired at Texas and then Urban hires him as an offensive coordinator again?
Then does Ohio State want like the fired Texas? Yeah, I mean, but like, so it's like you say, okay, it could be Ryan Day. Well, if it's 6 years from now, I mean, Ryan Day might be the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens with three playoff appearances under his belt by the time, you know, like it's just, I don't think you can play the game because it's too hard to figure out because you just assume that Urban's not going anywhere for a while.
G. Nilly asked a really good question that we should have asked like immediately after our JT Braxton conversation. He said in 2024, the 10th anniversary of the national championship, who gets a bigger ovation from the crowd, JT or Cardale?
Ooh. I don't know. You guys are going to be covering that. I'm going to be dead. So you guys figure that out.
I think they're going to walk out together.
Yeah.
Will they do another throwing contest?
No.
Cardale will want to do it.
Yeah.
I think if you did that today, Cardale might get the better applause. But I feel like I've mentioned this over time. I think as time kind of separates JT Barrett from Ohio State, I think people will recognize and appreciate the things he did. So, I mean, I think it could be JT in 6 years because people could forget about Cardale Jones. He could kind of fade a little bit into obscurity if he doesn't do anything in the NFL. I'm not saying JT Barrett will do anything in the NFL either. But I'm saying, as time goes on, I think JT's name will stand a little longer.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it'll be basically equal. The only thing is, like, Cardale is just one of those guys that, like, makes you shake your head because he's so funny and crazy. It's like, could that... it's like, JT, they'll both get, like, extreme we love you cheers, but Cardale might get a couple extra, like, oh, man, that guy kind of cheers, too.
You guys know that IHOP changed his name to IHOB?
Yeah, well, I thought we should talk about that.
I was about to...
Austin Chappelle Austin said, what are your thoughts on IHOP changing its name to IHOB?
Terrible.
But they revealed it, like, this morning, Monday morning, what the B is for.
Yeah, I just assumed it was going to stand for breakfast.
That's what everybody thought.
You know what it looks like to me? The way it's come across, and I just looked at the Twitter, it's like a 15-year-old hijacked their account and hijacked the company and gave them all these menus or whatever. Like, now we're a burger place. We're no longer doing pancakes. Like, no. You are IHOP. You do pancakes.
Has IHOP perfected the pancake enough that it can start branching out in the burgers? I feel like they have room to improve on the pancakes first.
Well, I mean, I just... when's the last time... Well, shouldn't they be like IHOP in the morning and IHOB in the evening? That's what they should do. They should make all their signs... that the P flips, like every day.
But they change the menu at McDonald's.
There's like a big production, where a guy goes out with a long stick, and he takes the bottom of the P and he flips it up and makes it a B, and it's like, hey, it's a B, it's a, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say because you can't rotate it because then it'd be I hod, so you have to flip it. So you.
Right.
So I, I
Yeah, you can't. But if you just go straight up, right? That's what P,
what's the P look like? Yeah.
P looks like that, and you go, you push it, and it's still a B. Yeah, you push it. Mm-hmm. And it'd be a big thing. You could have people from the town. You could, like, win the right to push the P into a B. Like, come be our P flipper. Win the chance to be a P. Maybe I swear. Not in public relations. When's the last time you guys went to IHOP for dinner?
Never.
The last time I went to IHOP in general was when I went on the road trip with Ari after the national title game. We were somewhere in Louisiana. I knew what I wanted. I wanted IHOP pancakes. Went there, ordered a stack of five, waited an hour. He brought me one, and I left.
What?
It was the only time I've ever left a restaurant like without paying, like because they got my order wrong, and I just like, I'm not paying for this. See you later. I paid for my coffee because I drank it, but I left like $2 on the table and walked out.
You asked for five pancakes, and an hour later, they brought you one pancake.
Yes.
It's a pancake.
Yeah.
A pancake literally takes 3 minutes to make.
Yeah. Ari can back me up. Yeah, that happened. And there was also something on the plate that, like, kind of looked like poop. I don't think it was. I think it was just, like, chocolate icing. But it was a dirty plate they gave me with one pancake when I had ordered five. And he said, like, here's one. I'll bring you the rest later. And he was, like, very clearly overwhelmed. I don't think it was the waiter's fault. I think he might have been the only waiter working. But still, I wasn't going to wait around for my four other pancakes.
That's
but,
awful.
So I left, yeah.
So I guess if you're a place, though, there's an IHOP like right down the road from my house.
Yeah, drove by here.
It mm-hmm. is busy on Sunday mornings, but it never seems busy like in the evening. So I guess it's like, well, why would you change to burgers? And it's like, because people actually want to eat hamburgers at 6 o'clock at night. And I just, and the other thing is too, it's like all their pancakes, it's like they all have like all tons of whipped cream and like crazy stuff on them, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, do you want to eat dessert for dinner? I don't know. I guess I get it. But I don't know.
If they had done this on April 1st, I think no one would. We would all have a different opinion because we'd all just take it as an April Fool's joke. Like, oh, we're doing this one day a year.
But, yeah.
Like, you're changing. You're completely changing the identity of your brand.
Well, do we know? Are they not going to serve pancakes now?
No, they still are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, like, remember when, Boston Market used to be Boston Chicken, and they didn't want to just be chicken anymore. So they changed to Boston Market, and then I was like, they still have chicken, but they have other stuff. I guess the problem is having a particular food item in your name. You're the international, what if they were just IHOF, International House of Food?
I'd go there.
Yeah. And then it's like, they got all kinds of stuff. It's like, what do you got here? We got food. But you're making a commitment to a specific item in your name, and you're so grossly changing what the item is, they'll be out of business in 5 years. Unless they want to sponsor Buckeye Talk, then of course.
I'm trying to think of like the equivalent. It'd be like a pizza place that suddenly decides they're, in addition to pizza, they're also going to serve tacos. Like Little Caesars Pizza and Tacos.
Whataburger tweeted, as much as we love our pancakes, we'd never change our name to What a Pancake.
Really?
Yeah.
They went after him like that?
Yep.
By the way, Whataburger, why aren't you in Ohio?
They'll be here eventually.
Everything comes here.
I mean, it would be like if you had a football podcast where you talked about food and robots. It doesn't make any sense. You've got to stick to one thing.
All right, I'm going to go to some email questions because I set up this email account and then didn't use it last week.
Oh. Also, by the way, I got more. What's the psychopath robot? I mean, everyone's sending me their psychopath robot. I was on vacation, so I didn't have a chance to dig in on it. They made a robot that is on purpose like a maniac?
I guess so. I didn't read it. All I know is that Chris Long from the Eagles is on your level when it comes to the robot.
Oh, for real? Let's get him on.
I think we could. I think he'd be an interesting guest. He's a lot to talk about. We have an email address, buckeyetalkpod@gmail.com. You can send questions there, complaints if you'd like. Eric Bronstein sent one in and said, how do you think Dante Booker will factor into the linebacker rotation this year? Seemed to have a ton of upside before getting hurt in 2016. And ultimately seemed to struggle in 2017. He was also hurt in 2017. He was in concussion protocol at the end of the year.
And then had shoulder surgery.
And then had shoulder surgery. Yeah. So what do we think of Dante Booker's role this coming season?
I think we've talked about Dante Booker in the offseason. Yeah. Again, I just think he's a bonus. I just don't. I'm not factoring him into anything because you don't know what his deal is. Mm-hmm. And he's had bad luck with injuries. I think he's a good player. I also think there were times when he did get to play that he wasn't an absolute playmaker.
Struggled a little bit. Yeah.
He was on the field, you know, at times last year, and some of the linebacker problems they had came when he was on the field. And I've again made it clear that I thought the linebacker coaching had a lot to do with that. It feels like they have a lot of players there. They have a lot of young players who are eager and ready for bigger roles. And I think a healthy Dante Booker could absolutely be a good player for them. But I just don't know how you can count on anything at this point, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Number 50 on our top 50 players for 2018.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's unfortunate with him that he's had all the injuries that have kind of happened to him. So, I mean, if he plays at all in any rotation form, it's, you know, it's going to be a bonus, not just to Ohio State, but to him that he at least gets a chance to play a little bit in his final season.
Great guy, good player, bad luck.
By the way, I want to go back to the IHOB thing for a second. UMBC's Twitter account, which I think was the real MVP of the NCAA tournament, tweeted just a few minutes ago, "No, we are not changing our name to the University of Maryland Burger College."
Nice.
They should.
So everyone's just going after IHOP now.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so they're. I'm waiting just to see just every company go after them. I have to check to see if Wendy's has said anything yet.
Wendy's is pretty snarky.
Wendy's is savage on Twitter. They're as savage as like any other like fast food company.
Sam Stetcher sent an email. Says best ice cream in Ohio. Grader's, Jenny's, Mitchell's, other. You guys have ice cream takes. I like Jenny's. I've had Jenny's. I've had Mitchell's. I've had a milkshake from Grader's. I had a chocolate milkshake from Grader's not that long ago. Might have been the best milkshake I've ever had.
Really?
It was really good. But I think Jenny's, it's called salted peanut butter with chocolate flecks is the best ice cream I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
Expensive.
Pricey, but I think worth it. Mitchell's is very similar to Jenny's. I've had it in Cleveland. I don't know if it's anywhere outside of Cleveland. But yeah, I like Jenny's.
Yeah, I think Mitchell's is almost exclusive to Cleveland. So, you know, Cleveland listeners are always going to have a much different opinion of it than most of us. I have had Mitchell's in the past before I moved down here to Columbus. I thought it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
You guys go to Witt's ever?
I have had Witt's. I wasn't a fan.
Really?
I thought it was just okay. I've
honestly never heard of it. I'm guessing it's a Columbus area place.
It's all over Ohio. It's, but it's like soft serve. Mm-hmm. And they have like different stuff you mix in. The one thing about Grader's, I like Grader's, but I think their chocolate chips are overwhelming at times. And they're not, they're like giant chunks of chocolate. And most things, I think the whole thing there, right, is that almost everything has giant flecks of chocolate in it. And I actually like the flavors that they do when they don't have the chips in it. Although I do think the coconut chip is good, but I think the chips can be overwhelming sometimes. And I think it's dark chocolate. Is it not? That's the chocolate in there?
Love dark chocolate.
I don't know that it's not. And I apologize if I'm speaking out of turn about the chocolate. But it's sort of like, hey, we give you big chunks of chocolate. It's like, sometimes I don't want big chunks of chocolate in my ice cream. So sometimes I'm not in the mood for Grader's. But I also think there needs to be a distinction. I don't think it's fair to compare a place like a fancy ice cream place where a scoop is like whatever, $4.50,
yeah,
versus like a kind of normal ice cream place where a scoop is like $2.25.
Is Grader's a normal place?
I think Grader's is normal.
Okay.
I think Grader's I would lump in with like Dairy Queen and like sort of normal, hey, let's go get ice cream. Jenny's. I mean, in my house, you don't just go get Jenny's ice cream.
Oh, we do like in my house.
It's like a special occasion.
I used to live in Short North in Columbus and like could walk to Jenny's. It was like 10 steps. Now I have to drive there, so I don't have it nearly as often. But there were
summer, you really were like 10
the
steps.
The summer I lived in Short North, I was probably at Jenny's once a week.
Nice. But not once a day.
No.
Yeah.
No.
That's a lot of money on ice cream.
They used to have a really good sandwich. It was like, it was a chocolate truffle cookie with like buttermint ice cream. It tastes a little bit like a Thin Mint.
Great. Nice.
Great. Jacob Diefenthaler. Sorry if I pronounce your last name wrong. Had a two-part question. He said, first, what happened to Trey Knox? Trey Knox, four-star wide receiver in the 2019 recruiting class from the same high school as Master Teague, who at a time, like last summer, he was camping at Ohio State. I think people thought last year that he was going to commit to Ohio State, and he didn't do it. And I think there was a time where he was, if not the number one receiver on their board, like close to it, and a guy they really liked. And I think it's just a matter of guys don't really develop maybe the way you think they will, or other guys you also had on your board developed a little better. So I just think he sort of fell behind some other guys. And I don't think he'll end up being in Ohio State's class. Not possible, but he went from like kind of a lock, I think, in some people's minds to a guy who I think will probably get left out because they just like some other receivers more than they like Trey Knox. Second part of his question. Over the next 10 years, is Penn State or Michigan State going to be more of a rivalry? This is... Wait, what? Okay, sorry. In the next 10 years, is Penn State or Michigan State going to be more of a rivalry? And he says, Urban, Harbaugh, Franklin, D'Antonio, which coach leaves their current school first?
Wow, that's great questions.
I think over the next 10 years, Penn State will definitely be more of a rival than Michigan State.
Agreed.
I think we've seen the best of what Michigan State can be.
Yeah.
And I think if Harbaugh gets it going with any sustained success, it's going to be harder for Michigan State to play at the level it's been at basically the whole D'Antonio era. All the credit to Mark D'Antonio. They got to the frickin' playoff.
Mm-hmm.
He's beaten Urban Meyer in like two gigantic games, which like nobody else can claim. So all the credit in the world to Michigan State, but I think we've seen the best of Michigan State. I think the best of Penn State is yet to come. As good as Penn State has been the past couple of years, I think Penn State is going to be a team that's eventually going to make some noise in the playoff and is going to become more of a rival. I mean, they are a rival with Ohio State, but I think they can sustain it.
Second part. Sorry, go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, to answer the second part of the question, I know you're just who's going to stay longer. I think it's Harbaugh almost by default.
Who's going to leave first?
Who's going to leave first? Harbaugh. I think almost by default because I can't imagine with James Franklin turning Penn State into what I think it can be, which is a program that's going to be just below Ohio State's level and contending for playoff spots year after year. I don't think he leaves anytime soon. And D'Antonio, I don't know if he wants to leave East Lansing anytime soon, the way he's got that program going, where every once in a while they're going to be a challenger to sneak up on everybody and get out of the Big Ten East again.
Yeah, I think there's layers to that. I just don't think James Franklin's an NFL coach. So, and I don't know why he would leave Penn State. I don't know where he's from, Pennsylvania, so I don't know there's another job that they can get him to leave. We talked about Urban. Harbaugh, I think I could very well see going to the NFL, given the opportunity again. I also think like the Michigan State athletic program could completely explode and all their coaches are gone and Mark D'Antonio could not be there. So, I don't know. I think maybe Harbaugh, just because of the obvious NFL thing, but short of Harbaugh leaving for the NFL, it's just a matter of like who might retire first. And I think the answer to that might be Urban.
I think that might be true. How old is D'Antonio? D'Antonio is several years older than Urban, though, I think.
D'Antonio is 62. He just turned 62 in March.
And Urban's coming up on what, 55?
54.
54. He's going to be 54? His birthday's in July,
I think. He's 53 right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, D'Antonio's 62. So, yeah, I think Harbaugh NFL makes sense. I think D'Antonio probably would retire before Urban, but I also think
D'Antonio could like coach until he's in the grave.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
And Urban, I don't think will.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'm trying to find questions. Oh, to make the people angry make the people upset who get angry when we go on tangents about weird things. And I'm going to butcher this name. Degesh Kinney sent in an email. He says, of all the players and coaches on Ohio State's roster, who would you guys pick as your top three to help you survive the zombie apocalypse?
Oh. I feel like we should turn off. Should we stop recording while we think about this for 2 minutes? All right.
I want someone crazy. Who's the craziest person in that building?
The craziest person in the building.
Until he had left, I would have said Kerry Combs.
Yeah, I would want Kerry Combs.
Yeah,
I would want Kerry Combs.
I think Tabor Johnson is in that zone.
I want a good combination of psychotic and resourceful.
Right. I feel like Ryan Day would be extremely resourceful. He's the guy that'll sit back and really map out a good plan.
But I think he could overthink it. He might be too smart for his own good. I think that's possible.
Yeah, I think that's possible. Boy, how about maybe Michael Jordan? I think Michael Jordan is smart, but is also a butt kicker.
Yeah.
I'd take Michael Jordan.
What about Nick Bosa?
You know who I have as a... I don't know about Nick Bosa. No offense, Nick Bosa. I just don't know if it's in a zombie apocalypse, if that's who I'd pick.
I would pick Kendall Sheffield, who was just listed as the fastest player in college football, and then I could just hop on his back, and he can run me away from the zombies.
Yeah, he's going to run you. He's going to hop on his back.
Send Paris Campbell out to get supplies since he's the fastest guy.
Yeah, give me speed.
You know who I think I would pick for sure again is Ryan Stamper.
Oh, yeah.
Who's their guy who, like, takes care of everything. Who, like, Ryan, he's a former player, so he's, like, in good shape, buff, smart, like, is trustworthy, is trusted with a lot of stuff by Urban, relates to the players. I think he'd be a good leader. If you're listening, Ryan Stamper, that's high praise that we would want you on our side in a zombie apocalypse. What other players? Like, I think I would have said Billy Price. I'm trying to think, like, who else are, like, the, like, older. I mean, I understand crazy, but I just want, like, I would also be very much on, like, reliable, smart guys.
Yeah. I'm trying you get to think. Three, like a balance.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't know if you could pick any of the senior receivers, because then you have to take the whole group together.
That's true.
Yeah, you can't have three.
Draymond Jones might be good.
Yeah.
I like Robert Landers would be good, I think.
Yeah, he'd be great.
Yeah. Robert Landers would be fun, too. Even if the zombies, like, ate you, you'd have a good time with Robert Landers while they were consuming your brains.
I'm trying to picture the cast of Dawn of the Dead, the 2004 movie, and trying to put Ohio State players and coaches into those roles.
Yeah, that's when we really get desperate for summer content. We'll do that. I don't know. It's a good one. It's a good question.
Well, it depends if...
Yeah.
It's not a good question. It's kind of a weird question. It's fun, but it's also impossible.
Well, it depends if you're talking like Dawn of the Dead zombie apocalypse or Zombieland zombie apocalypse, because those are two completely different things.
And now we're in a zombie hole that I don't really understand.
Yeah, Drew Christman can distract them with bottle flipping.
There you go.
Let's see. We got a question. This will be the last email question, and there's no name. It's just the email. It's M.T. Hopewell. He said, can you shed some light on how things are going for the team right now or from now until fall practice? He says, is it just school? Is there anything organized? Can coaches be involved with the players? Do players stay in Columbus or do they go home? So right now the rules are you get 8 hours per week. And that's new. Like, the coaches can be with you for those 8 hours. They used to not be able to. That's why they always used to say, like, what, do you want an update on the team in the summer? Like, ask the strength coach. Because technically the head coach and the assistants weren't allowed to be with them. They're allowed now for 8 hours a week. Two of those hours can be meeting time and film study. But it's mostly strength training, and they do like team runs and stuff like that, and they're into that stuff now. If you look at it on Twitter, you can see some of that stuff. They're in school. They moved in last week. I think the summer session that they're in, I think, started last Tuesday or last Wednesday. So they're in class right now, and it's kind of that up through August. I think they get a little bit of time away from home before camp starts, but they're here in Columbus. The whole team is here. A lot of guys, I think, end up staying here. There's not that much time between the end of the spring semester and when all the freshmen and stuff start. It's like 3 weeks. So some you'll see, like, some guys will go, like, if they're from Florida, they'll go back home from Florida for a few days. But I do think a lot of them end up staying in Columbus and doing workouts around here. So it's a little split. But in terms of organized stuff, they are together. They are doing training. I think there's rules on, like, you can't have a football, or, like, the coaches can't be out on the field when you have a football. But, like, Dwayne Haskins, I'm sure, is getting throwing sessions in at night with the receivers. So I think they covered it.
Yeah, I was there on Friday. They already have, like, sort of the zone 6 catch board, like 10,000 catches, where they list all the receivers out there. Someone wrote next to KJ Hill's name, Shrimp.
Shrimp?
I think someone was just messing with people. I just saw, like, Shrimp written next to KJ Hill's name. I thought, I was coming, cracked me up a little bit.
Nobody goes home anymore. Like, the idea of, like, nobody goes home for the summer. Like, you have to be here. And then it's like, you might take a little break and, like, get to run home. But, yeah, it's just funny. I mean, it's just like, I think most fans know that, but it's just, like, it's a 365-day-a-year job.
Yeah.
And as Bill said, it's new rules what the coaches can do, but you are expected to be here and working out with the strength coaches and then doing 7-on-7 stuff on your own. Like, you don't get to go home. You don't get to, like, go on a 2-week European trip with your family, whatever. Like, this is your job.
Yeah.
This is your unpaid job, and you work it 365 days a year. And you might get little breaks here and there, but you are here all year.
Last question. Josh Curry asked to me, he says, Bill, being from Philadelphia, are there any good cheesesteak places in Ohio? No.
Penn Station has Penn in the name. It's
Penn Station's in New York.
Oh.
Yeah, which I find confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's not. Yeah, it's
because of the bread.
Because of the bread. Yeah.
I mean, I think do you eat cheesesteaks in Ohio though, or do you just not eat them?
No, I've had one from the Bella's a couple times. It's not the worst thing I've had. It's not bad. It's just not the same.
It's not as good, but sometimes you want a steak sandwich. So, I guess it's one of those things. Yeah. Like, if you're from Philly, do you just say, I'm not eating a steak sandwich outside Philadelphia? Or is it like, well, this isn't close to as good, but it's still, in general, an enjoyable food thing?
No, I don't swear them off totally because I'm not in Philadelphia. I do not like when they put Philly cheesesteak on the menu because it's not.
Right.
Because we're in Ohio.
Right.
But no, I think, like the Bella's, I think, is passable. I think I've had one from Penn. No, I haven't had one from Penn Station.
Steak Escape? You big Steak Escape guy?
No, somebody told me like Charlie's is good. Yeah. I've never had
Charlie's
that.
Is okay. They're solid, I think.
I mean, you chop up meat and put it in a roll. I mean, like it's not
a difficult thing to make. It's just the roll.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get a good one, I think. Here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what you should do is you should get rolls from Philly and keep them in your freezer and then just go buy.
I have not been there yet. But there's a place near Nationwide Arena, and I don't even remember what it's called, but I do think they get rolls shipped in from Philly.
Nice.
So I'm ashamed to say I haven't gone there yet.
Nice. If you want, you could send me on an expedition and I can give you my non-Philly-based opinion.
Have you had a Philly cheesesteak in Philadelphia ever, have you,
Tim? When I went to the Army-Navy game in 2015, this is close that I probably got, was like they had a Tony Luke's at Lincoln Financial.
Not bad.
I'll get that. Yeah. You went and had good pizza in Ohio?
I went and had decent pizza in Ohio. I went and had what I would consider average pizza from the East Coast in Ohio, which has been difficult for me to find here. It was in Yellow Springs. It was a place called Ha Ha Pizza. And I actually, what told me it was good is that we had to get it on wheat crust because that's all they had. Yellow Springs had like a giant street fair going on. We didn't know that when we went there. It was a zoo. There were so many people there. We had to park like 3 miles away and walk into town. But they like ran out of white dough. So we had to have it on wheat and it was still good.
Okay.
So that told me I just like projected to what it would taste like on normal pizza dough. Like I've seen pictures of the normal pizza dough and it was very much like the kind of pizza that I'm into. Triangle cut, a little greasy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Did you go there for the pizza or were you there for other reasons?
No, we went there for the pizza and to go to the brewery.
Okay.
Yeah.
But how far is it from Columbus?
Like 50-something minutes.
You're 50 under, minutes for pizza?
Just under an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a cool town. It's like an artsy kind of town. Dave Chappelle lives there.
Huh. Did you see him?
No.
Could we get him on the podcast, do you think?
Maybe.
All right. Next podcast, we'll be eating pizza in Yellow Springs, Ohio with Dave Chappelle. Guaranteed. Is that it? Do we have anything else?
That's it. If there's more questions, we'll get to them next week.
So, yeah. So, this week we get, we'll try to stay 3 weeks behind on our questions. Yes. So, we got rid of the ones from 3 weeks ago. So, next week it'll be the ones from 2 weeks ago now. We'll be 3 weeks ago then. All right. Follow us on Twitter, @ Tim Bielek, @ Doug Lee Maurice, @ Bill Landis 25. Read our stuff at cleveland.com/OSU. Make sure you get subscribed to wherever you listen to podcasts. It's just the best way to get this. If you're listening to this, you know how to get it. But tell your friends and make sure you never miss a Buckeye Talk. What do we have? You guys have any stories coming up for people to be ready for? We got the top 50 countdown.
Countdown going on right now. We're going to start, and I guess by the time you listen to this on Wednesday, we may have already started it. Our schedule breakdown. I think the plan is we'll do two a week leading up to the week of Big Ten Media Day, which is the 23rd of July. That's what we'll give you a breakdown of the opponent, but also give you like what percentage chance we think Ohio State has of winning that game, culminating in the percentage chance we think Ohio State has of going undefeated next year. So that's going to start this week.
Okay. That'll be good. And there's some recruiting stuff. There's a recruiting camp this week, Tim. Is that right?
Yeah. There's recruiting camp on Tuesday.
And Saturday.
Yeah. I'll be there on Tuesday. We'll figure out who's going to be there on Saturday. But yeah, that's there also. There'll be some kids coming. It's always, like beforehand, it's kind of hard to get a grasp on who exactly is going to be there. But then like you'll show up. Like Tim went to the camp the other day and Harry Miller was there. And no one expected him to be there.
Okay.
And then he announced his commitment 2 days later. So, yeah, I'll be there on Tuesday, and there's another one on Saturday.
All right. So again, we recorded this on Monday, and then we have stuff coming this week. But again, we'll continue with the Wednesday Buckeye Talks. Someone had we were asking like if we should break it up or not. We haven't had a bigger discussion about that, I guess. But I know someone was it. Someone suggested like you guys do a recruiting one on Monday.
Yeah.
We do a football one on Wednesday, and we do food and robots on Friday. And it's like we're not doing three podcasts a week. That I can guarantee. So we'll figure out what we do in the season. But for now, every Wednesday, stick to Buckeye Talk. Thanks to you guys for listening. We're glad we finally got to the JT Braxton question this week. Keep your questions coming. You can always email them during the week to, what is it? What's the email?
BuckeyeTalkPod@gmail.com.
And you can tweet us during the week at BuckeyeTalkPod. And you can just tweet us individually, or you can just, you can drop the 5-star reviews. Are we still an overall 5-star?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, you can also mail things to Tim. Tim, what's your address?
Yeah. Or just go knock on his door.
Yep.
That's fine too. All right. Thanks to you guys for listening. For Bill and Tim, I'm Doug, and that was Buckeye Talk.